call the customer service.
There you go. Thank you. My constant reminder. The first item is the approval of the agenda for the committee. I would entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Motion made and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. The second is the approval of the minutes of February the 2nd, 2012. I'm sorry, wrong. Wrong page.
March 8th.
March 8th. Approval of the motion made.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. I love it that at 2 o'clock we're embarking on what last time we attempted naming stations took 2 full committee meetings and most of a day. So this is much easier because of the professional staff work and the leadership of Fairfax County. I do want to publicly acknowledge what I think is a very good step on the part of the Fairfax County Board, which was to reconsider the initial naming after some feedback from the Metro staff and taking the temperature of riders and a number of other individuals, and I think has made this process much easier and hopefully less contentious. So thank you on behalf of the Metro Board.
I'm just going to say a thank you because actually my chairman said that the Metro Board rejected it. We didn't get that far. I made sure we didn't get that far so that and by sending it back, I think it was an exceptional cooperative job between the county and Metro, and it was an engendering piece for the community because they suddenly realized that there really is a rail system coming, extension coming, and they had a part in it. So I think it was helpful, and I hope that the board sees the improvement that's been made, I think, by really using the guidelines. So I think it was very helpful.
Ms. Richardson?
Yes, I want to thank Chair Hudgens for her leadership and also bringing our two teams together and encouraging a cooperative working relationship, and it really has been a partnership. And I want to recognize our partner from Fairfax County Department of Transportation is here, Nick Profelli, who has also been working very closely with us. And partnership is the right word because that's what it ended up being, so that this was really a very thorough and thoughtful process, and it really is my pleasure to walk you through that. So, as you recall, we are here because we owe the project team our station names for the Fairfax stations, and the board supervisors approved the names just Tuesday, so we were really very speedy to make sure that we got here so that we could get the names to the project in May. As a review of our station name policy, which we worked over pretty much several months ago, but the names, station names, are to give a sense of place. They are to represent, and suggested that they represent centers of activity, cities, communities, neighborhoods, landmarks, and that they are unique and relevant. But more than anything, that they serve as wayfinding for our customers on the system. We have a character limit of 19 characters for primary and 13 characters. signatures for both primary and secondary names altogether. And the 19 is for the main station, is the main stations, the 13 are for the transfer stations. Landmarks, we further defined that the last time we discussed this. Landmarks are to be within walking distance or a half a mile is what we wanted to do. The jurisdictions are to complete community input, submit the names, and to, if there is a change in naming policy, to provide the commitment for the funding of that. The board included and added to the naming policy that Metro would conduct customer research, which was not previously a part of the policy. As I mentioned, on the next page, please. As I mentioned, this has been a very expansive, also, process. On the Fairfax County side, they had four. They received feedback from four different community meetings. They also had an online chat. They used previous research that we had done and took the value from that. They also, I will say, they also studied long-lasting station names in the metro system and really put an eye toward which were the ones that really are helpful to customers, which have withstood the test of time and not have been changed. So there was a lot of deliberation. At the same time, we worked together. Metro conducted an online survey, which we kept open for a full month, and we received over 16,000 responses, as you can see, which really hit the ball out of the park and made a record for us. It was a record-breaking participation level. As you might guess, the last highest participation involved the MAP. So there was a high level of interest in this. And as the chair mentioned before she had to step away, there is a high level of awareness about this project. One of the questions that we asked in the survey was simply just to get an idea. I know it may seem like, well, why would you ask something like that? It's a major project, but are you aware of all of this, right? But they're aware of the construction, they're knowledgeable about it, or they deem themselves to be somewhat knowledgeable about it, so that's very good. Just as we talked about in the last session where I spoke, the survey is one of several inputs. And so what I'd like to do is walk you through what the survey results are and the leading names out of the survey, but also the difference between that and what Fairfax has put forth, because Fairfax has also taken into account community input. They also, as I mentioned, took into account research that we did last time, and I believe have come forth with a very strong slate. So first, as you can see, we are in sync on the survey, on the Metro survey part, with the names, in the first one, McLean, Tyson's Corner, number six, Reston Town Center, and number seven, Herndon. So those were all in sync with the survey. There were some differences, and I'd like to explain that. On number three, as you'll see, Tyson's Central. While that was popular on our survey, what our participants in the survey did not have the advantage of is lining up all the names one last time. When they were going through the survey, they were asking questions one at a time. So then what you would have is the issue that we had before, which is the repetition of names. And today that still causes us a little bit of a challenge with Farragut West and Farragut North, frankly. So they looked at other names to consider and have suggested Greensboro. And what I also didn't mention at the beginning of my conversation is Fairfax has the challenge of also developing station names for areas that are developing, that don't have major development either. So they were also looking in a very futuristic way about going forward and what would be useful to centers of activity and for future development, and have suggested that Greensboro, since it would be responsive to the repetitiveness that may have happened, but also lend itself for creating kind of a center of activity for that area that could be carried on in a number of ways. Station four, Spring Hill Road and Spring Hill, the combination of those two in our survey received 67%. So Spring Hill has some sizzle and magic to it, and that is where they landed, dropping the word road. And I think taking a little bit of our learning and association from some of the longstanding names, particularly on the Red Line, where we don't refer to roads or names, but it's simply Bethesda. It's simply Rockville. And those names have carried on for a long time. And so they're bringing forth, again, just simply Spring Hill. On Reston and Wheely Avenue, both of those have historic significance in the area. Certainly Wheely Avenue, which is the legal name of the station that carried on, but also Reston. And it is a former site of a park and ride, which was Reston East and Wheely Avenue. But I think in part to avoid the repetition, but to retain some of the historical nature and avoid duplication again, they have flipped it and just simply called it Wheely Reston East. Reston Town Center, I mentioned, Herndon, and then finally Herndon Dulles East. So the point about that, that we heard in our focus group initially, that we heard in the public comment period, even though that may have popped as the number one in the survey, is the confusion around, and particularly with visitors, in calling a name Dulles East would indicate that you are, in fact, or could indicate that you're at the airport and you're not. So the major landmark there to help people with the wayfinding is the Innovation Center, and that is what has been approved by the county board. There's a building there that stands very tall and is, you know, memorable. But also I would add that in the survey we did allow participants to write in names. And Innovation Center was the name that received the highest number of write-ins in that category. So I do believe that this slate will serve the area well. It will serve our customers well in knowing where they are. I think that the issues that we've identified previously have been addressed. If you just want to go forward, you'll see the new names on top of the legal names that were there for the planning purposes, and you'll see we have addressed the repetition, and they're very simple, they're short, they're to the point. It will work very well in signage, will work very well in announcements, and in last page. With that, I recommend that the committee advance to the full board the Fairfax County Silver Line station names.
Mr. Chairman.
Board comment.
Well, I would just be pleased to move the resolution as presented so that it can go on to the full board next month.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Any discussion?
Question. Mr. Downey.
Just to be clear, these are what the Fairfax County Board has approved. It's slightly different from what was recommended to them, but this. Yeah. But, and I think possibly improved over what was recommended to them, but it's this is what they want.
Yes.
And it certainly is a lot better than what we had before.
That's the understatement of the
That's
year.
That's the understatement of the year.
Any other comment? Hearing none, I would call for a vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Congratulations to everybody.
Yeah.
This is record time about a station naming.
Now we got to build something.
That's good. this next item is sustainability. Mr. Bottenheimer, I'm sorry that I canceled you out at the last hearing.
Thank you for saying so, but no, I don't want to do that. So my mother-in-law says, if you have no idea what to say, say thank you. Can't go wrong. Before I started, I just wanted to also take the opportunity to introduce Rachel Healy, who joined us about a year ago, who is our principal sustainability manager and has been leading a lot of new efforts and has been pulling together information about a lot of the projects we're going to talk about today. So, really, today's presentation is just an opportunity to present a number of accomplishments that we've made to date in the sustainability area and to support a committed discussion on sustainability at Metro. And the first comment on the next slide that I would make is that sustainability is really a multifaceted term. It describes a social sustainability component, an economic component, as well as an environmental component. And in a lot of ways, Metro and transit in general is an inherently green and sustainable operation that advances sustainability in all these areas. But what I really wanted to talk about today and emphasize today is efficiency projects at Metro that have environmental benefits as part of them. As many of them quantified as possible, some of them are things that are going on that are directionally correct, but we just don't have numbers for it yet. So the first category of projects I wanted to describe are some early actions, things that have been taken up by one form or another of staff initiative around the agency, some internal and not so visible, some visible like platform lighting, but initially offered as a safety initiative and not necessarily as a sustainability initiative. But the reality on these is that they were incandescent flashing lights and they've been replaced with LED lights that are longer lasting, that require less frequent replacement, and so as a consequence, there are energy efficiency and operating savings associated with that. Another category of not visible actions is in the integration of hybrid vehicles into our non-revenue fleet. We've obviously talked a lot about hybrid vehicles that are out on the street in our buses, but at this point, we now have over 100 non-revenue vehicles that are hybrid. For FY12, a quarter of the vehicles that we were going to purchase were programmed to be hybrids. We've added a fleet watch component to the management of those that allows, I think was referred to earlier by Mr. Doherty. One of the things that it allows us to monitor is idling, and one thing that we have noticed is there's been a 95% reduction in that component of fuel use. There's a 95% reduction in idling because we've got in this component of the fleet, so I should say. And then across the agency, there have been a lot of smaller scale initiatives led by staff, things like hot water washes that replace solvent baths, using low VOC paint. VOC is an acronym for volatile organic compounds, and using green cleaning products and water conservation techniques. I'm going to skate across the surface for a lot of these things, and we can talk about them a little bit more. And then another area is materials recycling. And over the last 10 years, we've saved $5 million by taking outdated equipment and finding new uses for it and selling it for salvage value. And so that is something that's also sustainable and also generates savings to us economically. So we have a number of more visible actions related to facilities, vehicles, and also escalators that I want to talk about. The first is a couple of years ago, the board adopted a LEED Silver target for all new construction. And so there are a number of new facilities that are in design or under construction right now, including Shepherd's Parkway and the Glenmont Garage that hit that target. And there are a number of upcoming opportunities to meet or exceed the standard at Cinderbed, Southern Avenue, the Bladensburg Compressed Natural Gas facility conversion and the shop renovation, the Landover bus booth, and the transit police facility for Franconia Springfield Station. On board on our new 7000 series vehicles, and I'm sure Mr. Kubitschek will be able to describe this in detail, but there's an incorporation of LED lighting and regenerative braking. The onboard energy savings are being used to power onboard passenger information systems. It's not going into energy reduction in the system, but it is being used for those onboard purposes. And then other savings in the 7000 series vehicles include a unitized HVAC system, heating, ventilation, air conditioning that reduces freon use. They're oiless compressors, and it's a rail car body that does not require an acid wash. So these are all things that are environmentally friendly. Another thing that we've been talking about from a state of good repair and a safety and customer convenience point of view is the escalator rehabs and replacements, and that's extremely important in all of those, but just in rehabbing these escalators or in replacing them, you can enjoy significant energy savings, and we have A number of the folks in the TIES group and Alice are going out now, and they're actually comparing the power draw from comparable, you know, an original escalator, the rehab version of it, and then replaced unit to see what to see what the energy savings are, and so that we can have a basis for extrapolating across the entire replacement program what the energy savings is. But just the initial estimates for the comparison of a rehab unit to an original unit is about a 10% power savings. And then I just want to take the opportunity to mention again, we discussed this morning the Tenleytown, the chiller plant consolidation for the Safeway project in Tenleytown, and I mentioned that as part of the replacement of chillers there, there would be a 50% energy reduction expected, and that actually amounts to about $60,000 per year in energy savings from that replacement, which is significant. We have a number of chillers around the system, and to the extent that we are replacing them continually or regularly, there are going to be corresponding energy savings associated with those. Some new pilot initiatives that are small scale but giving us the basis for looking at more programmatic solutions. At the Roslyn and Boston stations, we've replaced twist-in LED. We replaced existing lights with twist-in LEDs, and those are saving about $1,000 annually, we estimate. I mentioned the Fleet Watch fluid management system on our new non-revenue vehicles that's helping us track fuel consumption. In addition, we also have the FTA grant on the wayside regenerative braking, energy storage, that is ongoing. And again, Mr. Kubitschek can describe that. And then finally, we have a number of new larger scale initiatives that that are really taking an identified efficiency and extrapolating across all facilities of type to generate energy and economic savings. The first one is a garage lighting efficiency program. Right now we're evaluating proposals that we've received to relamp all of our parking structures. So there's a customer quality of service element to this, which is going to be that there's going to be a much higher quality of light compared to the high-pressure sodium lights that we have now there right now. We've also estimated that we'll save about $1.5 million a year, and that those savings will enable us to pay for the installation and the relamping of all of those all of those lights. We think what's going to happen is that the energy savings are going to pay for the installation, and it will be left with the operating budget savings afterwards that are in the magnitude of $500,000 a year. The results, so higher quality of light, $500,000 a year, operating cost savings, plus $1 million a year less in energy consumption, and after the end of the performance contract, we'll realize all of those savings into the future. Another example of this is that's under exploration. It has not been done yet. Oh, and I should back up and say, if that performance contract approach to achieving energy savings and if, at the parking garages proves out, it could be potentially followed with similar approaches in our stations, possibly tunnels, and we have to, you know, obviously make them appropriate to those environments, but if that concept and approach may work there as well. We have hired a consultant to evaluate the most productive places in our system where we could mount solar facilities on the roofs of buildings, and we have identified, mostly on parking garages, about 12 megawatts of power generating capability. It's about 2% of our annual power requirements. Again, that could reduce power purchases annually by between $1 and $2 million. This is something where we would probably, we think, be able to use the energy savings to finance the installation of these solar the solar equipment. We probably would not realize savings in the first 10 years beyond that. It would be something that gives us a reliable source of power over the next 10 years, but it wouldn't necessarily, and it would generate an energy improvement. It would certainly be using less power, but it wouldn't necessarily come to the fiscal the bottom line. You know, so that's really an environmental grid project that, on its own terms. And then lastly, we have we're developing a print management program in the IT department, which is basically integrated management of all of our printers. We estimate that would save about $800,000 a year in power, less consumption of paper and ink cartridges. And so those are some of the things that are a little bit more broad scale. And then I guess just really beyond the fiscal element, there's really a strong strategic message, I think, with sustainability, which is, you know, showing that we're delivering more to the region every year, not just in terms of transit, but in terms of efficiency and cost effectiveness, that we're using resources wisely, and that we're a good investment for the region's dollars. And finally, I think we would like as much as possible to begin quantifying some of these numbers, the kinds of numbers I was talking about, with escalators, and to start developing performance metrics that would be the basis for setting performance targets on an annual basis in different categories. But I mean, that's work that's underway right now and not finished. But we could certainly come back to you and report on that progress over time. So that concludes the presentation.
Thank you. I think it goes without saying that our riders expect us to be green. After all, we keep saying we're the greenest form of transportation. And we're not necessarily telling our story about what we're doing, not only about fixing the system so it's safer and more cost effective, but that it's energy efficient, it saves money, it saves labor. And I agree that we need some kind of performance reporting process that focuses on what the actual savings are here and can tell our story coherently over a longer period of time. My sense is that most of this is invisible to everybody who uses the system. And if we don't tell people, including our regional elected official partners, our riders, other stakeholders, what we're doing in this arena, we're not doing justice to the commitments that you're making right now. We have a story to tell. We ought to be telling it. And I'd love to see that be part of some performance framework for the next year's budget. Not as a KPI necessarily, but thinking of it as a communication target that can make this more visible. I think I counted 5 different areas where not only are you saving money, you're reducing maintenance cost at the same time because they require less maintenance. Quantifying that and showing the public that we're good stewards of their system is, I think, a really important part of this. And if we're doing things like HVAC improvements that are much more energy efficient in addition to being more reliable, we ought to be quantifying it and saying, listen, not only are you going to be cooler, it's going to cost us less. The same thing with the chillers and the new generation of large-scale air conditioning. Not only are they more reliable, they're cheaper to run. And I think this is a good story.
Mr. Downs, I do. It is a good story. It's a terrific story. We have just spent a year and a half doing a community energy plan in Arlington, and one of the big components of that has been trying to figure out how to communicate to people who come and go from our buildings all of the various, many of the same things, strategies Nat's pursuing, we've been pursuing in our own local buildings. The board made a commitment in 2007 to reduce its greenhouse gases by 10%. And so the issue has been, how do you show people that? How do you demonstrate it? And going back to what Barbara told us earlier, which is, you know, the best place to communicate to people is when they're in our facilities. We've been figuring out how to do green labeling in our facilities to show people how this building you're in now compares to an average building of about the same size that hasn't been retrofitted. So, but the one thing I will say about this is, it's not as simple as it sounds to figure out what the right thing is that communicates properly. And one of the thoughts I have, and it goes a little bit to connecting us better, is people in all the jurisdictions are working on this. We've got Sierra Club and some other, you know, non-governmental groups who care deeply about this. You know, inviting some people in and saying, here's what we're doing. If we were going to communicate it better, how would we do that? It tells our story to the right people, pulls them into how we tell the story, and moves the whole thing forward. Because I think you're doing enough here that it would be of interest to these kinds of folks. I mean, I know our people who do communications for Arlington would be happy to offer suggestions, too. But I think the issue is partly getting the story out. The airport has the same issue. The airport's been working on this for 10 years. They're doing all kinds of amazing things. And the former CEO did not want to tell anybody they were doing it. And it's like, why? This is good. This is a good story. So I think we need to figure out. And reports to the board are fine. But in the end, it's really about communicating to all the people who are on the system or parking in the garage or riding the bus or whatever.
Because we are at the point where, well, we increase fares and we continue the reconstruction project, we've got to think of things that have higher visibility for the customers that we can say, we're doing this,
well,
and you can see it, and it's real, and it's right now.
Well, it's not only visibility. It's that it resonates with the values of our region, being green and sustainable. When you know, COG did these surveys, it comes up really high as a regional value. And needing to use less power means in Maryland and in Virginia, we're building fewer power plants, you know, to hell and gone because we're trying to manage our energy use. And that really matters to people. So
I was struck by, I turned it on.
Good. Thank you.
I was struck by some comments that people I know have made about stations. And not only did they notice that they were lighter, they thought they were much cleaner.
Yeah.
Even stations that hadn't been cleaned, they thought they were much cleaner because they were much better lit. And it's a twofer about what you're doing about relamping with the with new technology lighting. It's much more long-lasting, it's more dependable, but it also makes people feel like, my God, it's changing. There's something visible right here. And being able to tell that story to customers is, I think, really important about what's going on. And it's a way of emphasizing that they're getting something out of this that is visible. I just want to encourage you all to keep doing this and think about the communications process. As Ms. Hines said, it's a complex story and it needs multiple partners.
I want to applaud you again for these, in addition to what has already been said, for these environmental initiatives. I think that's definitely going in the right direction. I wonder, though, how much effort is put into integrating the environmental initiatives into our overall way of doing business. For example, you mentioned getting suggestions from employees and integrating them into what you do. I think that's a very good idea. We also spend a fair amount of money on fairly large capital projects. And is there any process when we're pulling together a capital project to have someone who is aware of, you know, possible environmental initiatives, take a look at that and say, well, here's three things you could do that would make this project greener,
right,
or that kind of thing.
Well, that's, you know, at the risk of talking for Bill Green and Carol Kissel, I guess the point I would say is to make about that is that having the capital program that we have and have been developing over the last couple of years is we're much better positioned to do exactly what you're talking about than we have been, you know, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. You know, you're starting to see business case efforts, just like the parking lane, the parking lot exit lane automation project. It's a business case for that. You know, there's a capital investment and a payback period. We think determined that it's in a short enough number of years to justify the capital investment. and that gets prioritized because of the business case. When you start creating a business case model as part of the project evaluation process in the capital program, I think you're teeing up a lot of these kinds of projects for just that kind of evaluation and prioritization.
And that's something that's actually happening. And you said
yes.
It could happen, but the idea is that it would happen.
Yes, I just want to add, as I was thinking about this as I was actually watching the presentation, quite a few of the items that were brought out were not because we had a sustainability effort underway. It's because the folks, the staff, had already brought that into their thinking as part of normal development of a project. That's why you're seeing the regeneration on the 7,000 series cars. That's why you're seeing the LED lights on the platforms. So, I mean, any damn good engineer and architect should be thinking about this stuff and not have to have a separate person tell them about it. So it's beginning to head in that direction.
Yeah, I'd also just like to add, just like on the 7K, because, you know, it really started 5 years ago, you know, as far as the planning and the layout and what direction that we're going. So, you know, Matt touched on some high-level items, but for example, like even the carpeting, us shifting from carpeting where we got to use caustic materials to clean it and everything else, going to a resilient floor. Now you can get away, you know, with just a regular, you know, water and soap. So when we looked at the vehicle, it was definitely the HVAC. Also, one of the approaches, you have to pay to dispose. And there's also liability with disposal, at least it's been my experience. So as we started approaching these projects, it's a life cycle that we need to really look at it. It's one thing to get it, but it's also how you maintain it, but also how you dispose of it and the impact of that. So the 7K, and as we follow up on more things, we could release, but those are some high level, even with the materials that we're looking at. For example, like even on the retirement of the rail cars as they come down the future. We can't put these aluminum body rail cars in the water to create reefs because they're kind of viewed as a hazardous product. So they have to be recycled in a different form and everything else. Not that stainless steel was 100% why we did that, but it's also just looking at it in the out years on how we're impacting the environment as a whole, as well as our operational expenses.
Thank you. I was just wondering if there was maybe an exchange amongst the transit agencies, because you brought up a lot of particular sustainability initiatives that we could learn from best practices from other places, but also we could, you know, share our best practices with others. And it seems like there are a number of different things that we do that we can, you know, certainly share with other folks, but also learn from.
So I'm going to ask Rachel to talk to that. There is an APTA sustainability group, and Rachel can describe some of the interactions we've had through that.
Right. So we actually do share information about what we're doing and share from other agencies and have participated in their performance indicator development for measuring just this. So we're always happy to learn from other metro agencies.
Good. Thank you. I appreciate the presentation, and I'd like to see it come back at some point, maybe in the middle of next year, maybe 6 months or so.
And could I add to that, if you can talk about how some of these things are being integrated into the processes more explicitly, that would be helpful too.
Thank you very much.
Next is HVAC, that's appropriate, HVAC rail fleet and station update.
I will say good afternoon.
Good evening.
Okay, well, we are talking about air conditioning. Okay, we wanted to come back to kind of provide a snapshot on the status and what we're doing. A lot of these efforts that we've been undertaking have been in the works for, you know, the last 2 or 3 years. The board and the jurisdictionals has been good in supporting our funding for our needs. So it's kind of like, okay, what are we doing? What are we getting in a return on this, and what type of improvement in performance? So this first slide is pretty straightforward. This is, again, absolute on calendar year. It doesn't go off a physical year. And it basically just shows you from a reportable standpoint of failures out there where we stand at.
And we would also like to add that we did increase our mileage from calendar year 10 to 11 as we were adding, you know, additional rail cars for service. Try to use a benchmark of about 5 to 10%, if possible, to try to make some improvements. It's a different mindset that we're trying to instill. It's really a 24/7, 365-day-a-year effort, not just a seasonal. Here, it's upon us. Next slide. As I was talking about fleet campaigns, these are major investments and stuff in here towards we're talking about, even though the 1000 series are going to be retired, we're not in a position to compromise and try to scale things out. We have immediate day-to-day needs, so these give you an idea between the fleets of the investments of where we've actually made wholesale component replacements or upgrades, even down to the level of software. The reason why we noted maintenance of the 5000 series has been noted previously here. It's a very challenging piece of equipment. It's not a very maintenance-friendly, you know, piece of equipment, and it does require a lot of extra work as we address this. Next slide. This might be a blue page. This was a good story. I mean, last week whenever we mailed it out, we had the numbers, and basically we're just showing you that we were making, you know, progress on this campaign. We want everything done in the May time frame for summer, so we're on target to go ahead and complete this as scheduled. Fleet improvements underway, the 1000s and the 5000s. Talk about, you know, the normal air conditioning stuff here on the graph, but I would like to also note the acronym APS Transformer. One of the things we're also looking at is that there's other equipment inside, and that stands for auxiliary power supply. Okay. One of the things we're also looking at is not just the way that the air conditioning system itself behaves, but there's other systems on the rail car that whenever they fail could potentially impact the air conditioning. That could be either it turns them off, or if the failure of that equipment happens in such a way, it could damage other equipment. So now it's not only just focused on what we're doing on a baseline of air conditioning, but it's also the other systems that are integrated that could possibly impact that as well. Okay, on the station side, this I just wanted to really point out, the middle paragraph. The system is designed to only cool air or condition air or process air, whatever term you want to use, 6 degrees difference. So that means if it's 100 degrees outside, the system was designed day one to process it to around 94. That's it. Now, that's why you see additional fans, and as y'all are aware, there's a lot of systems in the country and across the world that do not even have, you know, ventilation. I just wanted to kind of point this out that we've shifted the way that we've also looked at the maintenance. Previously, it was a seasonal approach where you'd only touch air conditioning or processing of air during the winter months. For us, though, it was part of it. It did not make any sense. If it's not working, it's not working. And also part of our acceleration for our capital program, whenever you're looking at why we're getting hit on some of these areas, that's one of the advantages of us being able to just come in and say, look, it doesn't matter. It's 24/7, 365. We've got to work this, you know, year-round. The other thing, as we pointed out, just air conditioning and everything else, but you really think about the external ventilation that this system has to challenge. We also have portals, say, for instance, at Union Station. You can, you know, kind of see outside. You're also operating longer rail car constants. Talking with some of the original planners, you know, when you pulled a 2- and 4-car train into a tunnel, it only pulled and drew so much air. Now you're looking at everything with 6- and 8-car trains, and this is one of the things that we're also going back to look at the equipment and the impact of this force that's, you know, being created by the system in our duty cycle. Next slide, please. This gives us a quick overview of, you know, about components, where things were at, you know, the overall age of it. For me, it's a very positive news story. You know, over the past couple of years, we've just shifted the way that we've started doing work. We're working it, you know, all year round. And by the June of this year, we are on target to have all of the air handling units to be up to date. which is monumental. And I know our plant maintenance staff is very excited for that. And we are installing much more reliable equipment, as Nat and them were talking about early on, that's much more friendly. Next slide. Basically, was just to give you an overview of the type and the level of work that's taken place, and also to kind of give you an example of the type of infrastructure that this system, you know, it requires to be sustained. So definitely a little bit different than the rail cars. You know, the rail cars are nice and very convenient to work with in a nice shop, but a lot of times, you know, our staff that's working this, it's below ground, it's above ground, it's in tunnels and areas and everything else, and so it is quite a challenge for them. So really commend them on their all of their effort and the way that they're working. This slide here talks about the, again, about the general, you know, cooling season. Pretty much from October, you know, to May, a lot of times everything is just, you know, really kind of turned off. I mean, realistically, because of the underground temperatures and everything else, if we start seeing spikes and stuff naturally, you know, we would turn things on a little bit early. But it's really becoming more of a, like I said, a year-round initiative, you know, a year-round effort. And also with us having the new technology and stuff that's coming on board, the ability for us to be able to monitor it. That's one of the next phases that we'll look at is it's not only just the type of equipment and stuff that we're selecting, but since we've got to send people down manholes or into covers or into tunnels and everything else, some of the equipment that we're installing that they might be able to understand the potential issue before they even depart the yard or, and or the facility, which makes our utilizing of our resources, you know, much more efficient and much more reliable whenever we respond. And I think that concludes the presentation. I'm open for questions.
Mr. Downs, Mr. Kubicek, I have a question. I appreciate how hard you all have been working on this. I am sure there are still some stations that you consider to be problem stations or that you haven't gotten to yet in terms of the cooling of the station.
Yes.
Might be helpful for us as board members to know what those are in our jurisdiction, so we're ready for those calls.
Okay.
And or what the time frame is that you're likely to get to. Pentagon City is one that sometimes comes up in Arlington, and so Rich is looking like, no, that's not one you get, that's one you ride through, right? But anyway, I do know that I occasionally get questions about that. I've gotten questions okay. about Boston. So if you could just let us know, because we're heading into that season earlier, it seems, this year than we have in some other years.
Sure. That should be very possible on the air handling and where some of the areas that we're viewing maybe longer-term issues as we look at this, the capital infrastructure. I would share this with you. For example, one of the areas that we are seeing is that some of the designs, they use the platform actually as a cooling ductwork. Well, if the platform is cracking, you have a few issues there. So that's one of the things that we're also looking at these designs and with these major line segment, you know, work that's taking place. Not only is it just, you know, the way that we're repairing the station, but it's also taking advantage to say while we're in there, well, maybe we need to look at ducting and everything else a little bit different so that way it doesn't have a cascading effect.
I just want to say on Pentagon City that there were problems last year. I was very interested personally in seeing that they got fixed. I think they did.
So hopefully they are.
Yeah. Number one on our hit parade is still Farragut North in terms of heating and air conditioning.
That is one of the ones that we will note on our list. we have a lot of investment and stuff, you know, that is taking place there, but there are some other things that we would like to work on and implement. And that's part of the reason why we started looking at the cycling of rail cars going through the system and also with the ventilation of the fans. We've also seen we've got the emergency exhaust fans that are supposed to be free-flowing. Sometimes we found that whenever they're running them, which they really shouldn't unless it's a case of emergency and stuff, it hurts the heat load and everything else. So it's the total network of the entire cooling system and all these variables that are affecting it.
Okay. Chairman, can I just, you had mentioned that one of the issues is that the stations are open to the outside, and obviously the tunnels are a big opening to the outside, and the trains also bring warmer air in when they come by. Does that mean that the stations that are closest to the end of the tunnels are more apt to have heating problems in the summertime?
No, I mean, there's a plus and a minus, I guess, on that, you know, because you have the air movement and such. But I would say I would really get more inside of the station, because whenever the system itself is processing the air and delivering it into the station, it's that direct location. The external forces is a little bit different.
One of the key things is the trains themselves are offloading an awful lot of heat, because their air conditioning system has to dump the heat somewhere. So they pull into the station, and as long as they're sitting there, they're dumping heat into the station. So you want some air movement also to draw that heat out of.
That concludes this item.
Yes, sir.
Next item, update on rail service adjustments.
Okay, we had to come back. We're just following up. We know that this is very important to the region. It ties directly, you know, into the customer experience as well as our, you know, capital investment. Just wanted to start off with some good news stories. One of the things that we've picked up, and it was also further supported by Barbara's presentation, also research, was that, you know, the major outages, you know, keep going forward. But it's also on our part that we were looking at single tracking initiatives, and this is the single tracking we communicate in the appendix about 3 months. Our major outages in this appendix here, we were able to take it all the way out to 2012. And just in case it's asked, yes, we're already working in 2013 and maybe peeking into 2014 as we look at it. Planning is very key in us, you know, sustaining the pace that we're undertaking. But by this is a good news story, because as we really focused on these outages, we were able to reduce the number of single trackings, you know, kind of about half on what we were really thinking about. And so that right there is very, it shows the power of us being able to do the these major outages, and it also just makes the work, you know, more efficient. Next slide, please. Wanted to give an update on the escalator, elevator shutdowns. It's pretty straightforward on what's taking place. We did move some stuff around that was previously, you know, communicated, naturally because of the cherry blossom. We're becoming very sensitive. It's very challenging between the baseball, men's basketball, women's basketball, ice hockey, and then the numerous events that happen in all the regions and stuff, working with Barbara's staff, and in our track rights meeting, we literally have individuals that are telling us, oh, well, we think that that this basketball is going to be, you know, during this time frame. Sometimes it's a little bit of a guess from season to season, so that's why we don't push all the way out, but we are starting to stage the work. But we are very sensitive to the activities that are happening in the region, and they continue. I think they'll only continue to grow. Next slide, please. As far as it went to shutdowns, all the shutdowns that we'd previously communicated had occurred. And I am very proud to note here, May 2012, this guarded 8 number switch effort on the main line, we will have this closed out. That's a very huge step for the agency. It's something that has been around here for a long, long time. And Mr. Sarles, whenever he came on board, he permitted us to really get after a very solid schedule. And we have held that thing 100%, 100%. And so this is good, because it frees us up to work in other areas. Also wanted to point out some of the work that's also taken place, that we're looking at kind of like quarterly goals, annual goals. This ties into some of the stuff that Mr. Troop was showing y'all earlier. We were talking about railroad ties, where we're talking about track fastener plates and stuff. And so we are starting to develop these models to say, okay, how much can we actually produce? One of the things I would say, like on the fasteners and the cross ties and stuff, that's a direct relation not only to manpower, but the type of equipment that we've been permitted to buy, hands down. And so very, very positive on that. Would like this right in here, again, is very important. As I noted beforehand, Barbara's staff and the rest of the communications team is to be able to communicate as much as humanly possible. I don't know if she has anything else to add on that one.
Yeah.
The only other thing I would add is that I briefed the committee last time on Metro Alerts by the Safety Committee, I believe. And so now that we have that capability to send out more extensive advisories, we're using it to alert very specific audiences. If we're working on a particular section of line or a particular stations, we can send out advisories directly to those people now. So I would encourage everybody who wants to get in the know to go to the website and sign up.
By the way, most of the operators who pull on the red line who pull into DuPont Circle continue to announce a reminder that the south side is closed, though it's on every train, it seems.
Yeah, I've noticed that, too, that there is a tribute to transportation reminding the operators that they're right on that every time. So we're also thinking of ways to, because things become a part of the wallpaper of life. So what else do we need to do to just remind people as we're moving forward?
Yeah, I'd like to add to that. I think we are doing a really good job of getting the information out, but I think we need to continue to look for opportunities. I'm looking at the linear feet of running rail, 15,760 goal, 15,000. I mean, I think we need to figure out a way to make this, to get this kind of information out in a very simple, because the overall message is that we are a little bit ahead of ourselves in terms of the work that we were planning to do. And I don't think that's getting out there very well. I mean, I think people are assuming that something's happening, whatever it is, and, you know, our intention is good. But in terms of accomplishing milestones and how we're doing on that, I'm not sure people have that good a sense. And it would be a good thing to come up with a simple way to get that message across, because we are being successful in doing what we set out to do, and I'm not sure that we have the simple messages out there that would make people understand the whole of it. You know, that people can see when we complete an escalator that they ride every day, but they don't necessarily, I mean, we should continue to say, but there needs to be a faster way to let people know.
I wish there were a graphical way. I wish we could show the red line, and we could show what we thought we were going to do and what we've done, and put a green new escalator where we put in a new escalator where we've done the rehab, so that, because I think this is, we keep talking about this issue of how do we help people see that there might in fact be an end in sight. It's like the fill the thermometer thing that people do for a capital campaign. It's the same kind of idea of helping people see that, you know, we're 50%, we're 60%, we're 70% of the way there. I have no idea if that really works in the way you do your work, but I know if I were looking at that, and it was every quarter refreshed, I might feel like, wow, stuff's really happening.
Yeah.
And if we were actually utilizing some of the empty ad space on Metro Rail,
it's on,
and about telling our story about the
Metro Forward, it's there.
I know, but it's not just Metro Forward, it's about, do you know what the target was for tie replacement?
As we're talking, the next phase of Metro Forward is actually on what I call the components. So you've been hearing us talk about switches. What does that look like? You hear us talking about one of the things is AC, what we're doing to fix the air conditioning units. But the phase after that could very well be the progress barometers. So we just need to figure out how to do that.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent idea, you know, lines on the red line that are green instead of red, or red instead of pink, or whatever. But just so people can see that, you know, things are happening, goals are being reached, stuff is being completed. I think that's an excellent idea. Fill the red line, you know.
Thanks to their cooperation and work
and patience and all of that stuff. You can't tell your story often enough in enough venues when you're going through something as massive as the rebuilding of the system. It's a constant challenge every day about telling your story early, often, and then keep repeating it. So.
Well, I wonder about 15,000 feet versus nearly 3 miles. Whether that was saying, you know, we've done nearly 3 miles, is feels like a bigger accomplishment to people than 15,000 feet.
I think it's in context, 3 miles of what?
Right, but 3 miles of rail, you know, I don't know.
And that, as they say, is that. Thanks, everybody, for all of the patience. Committee adjourned.